and welcome to the latest edition of Seattle Nice. I'm David Hyde here, as always, with Erica C. Barnett of Publicola. Erica, how is your Sunday morning going? It's a little rainy out there, I think.
I haven't gone outside in like a day and a half, so it's all good. High on paint fumes here.
What's wrong with that? It's soup season. Sandeep Kaushik, how are you doing?
I've got a cold, but otherwise, okay.
Everybody's got a cold. That's no excuse. All right, today we're... I'm sorry that sounded heartless. That sounded heartless because I too feel like a little under the weather. Today we are talking about the new city council. They're coming in January. We've got five new members joining Sarah Nelson, a to be announced council member, and Mayor Bruce Harrell. So the question is, you know, what changes in 2024? We know the big issues in the race were homelessness, crime, but maybe we can get past some of those in our analysis of what's about to happen and give you a preview, a sneak preview, because I know that both Erica and Sandeep know who this next fill-in council member is going to be. So Erica, do you want to start?
Well, I mean, I want to refute that notion right off the bat. I have no idea, but I will talk about the other five council members that are coming in. So it's going to be a majority, a super majority, ultimately, of newcomers. So I think the first thing to say is that, you know, we've got a council that's totally green for the most part. I think Kathy Moore worked for a council member a long time ago up in, she's in District 5. But we're talking about a council that's going to have had no experience in elected office and no experience on the second floor for the most part. So I think we're just going to see, you know, a couple months of them getting up to speed on stuff that ordinarily you'd have a lot of institutional knowledge and colleagues sort of helping you out. But in this case, I mean, it's going to be the greenest council I've seen since I've moved here in 2001.
Sandeep, 2 months of floundering. What do you think?
Well, look, there are a lot of new faces here. I should add that Maritza Rivera, while she hasn't been in elected office, has served in a number of different roles at the city, right, in various administrations, and most recently at Office of Arts and Culture. But yeah, but Erica's general point is right. You know, it is a very new council. We haven't had this kind of sea change at the council in my 20 years plus that I've lived in Seattle. So I think, you know, things are going to be very, very different, right? I think one of the biggest things is we're going to see a very different culture at the city council than we have had over the last few years. Just the departure of Shama Sawant alone, I think, is probably going to take the temperature down and the kind of the sort of adversarial and I would say sometimes toxic quality of the interpersonal relationships at the council that not just Sawant, but I think Sawant precipitated, though it certainly extended beyond her. And so, while these new council members are green, I also think they're also going to be a lot more collegial, right? Like the last couple of years at the council, Erica knows this, and David, I'm sure you know as well, has been marred by a lot of interpersonal conflicts as much as ideological conflicts, right? And some of that may get tamped down now that we have new faces and who are, for the most part, generally, you know, more or less aligned politically.
Yeah, I think that to blame Sawant for the lack of collegiality and toxicity interpersonally on the council is pretty inaccurate because, you know, for one thing, I think a lot of people behind the scenes get along with Sawant quite well. You know, I think some of the toxicity, you know, will remain without naming names on the council. And I think we've got, you know, some folks potentially coming on who are going to be a little bit of bomb throwers. I do think that, you know, obviously all of these folks are more ideologically aligned than not. But, I don't think it's, you know, probably accurate to say that, like, Joy Hollingsworth and Bob Kettle are remotely on the same page, right? I mean, Joy, who won in District 3, Capitol Hill Central District, is a fairly progressive, you know, left-leaning person, but in line with Mayor Bruce Harrell on a lot of issues. Bob Kettle, I mean, you know, he's a Queen Anne former Navy guy, and I would say pretty damn conservative. So, you know, I think it's tempting to lump all these people together in the same bucket and say, well, they're all going to agree on mostly everything, so they're going to get along. But I think that's, you know, a matter of personality, too. And that really remains to be seen.
Sandeep, let me ask you to linger a little bit on this question of your point about Sawant leaving. Didn't Sawant fundamentally change Seattle politics in a way that we're not going to entirely go back from? Or do you actually think we're going back to the genteel days of Nick Licata and Gene Godden when you first started on The Stranger and everything was super mellow, especially with the coverage from The Stranger?
No, I don't think it's entirely going away. No, I don't think it's kind of a complete erasing of the sort of cultural vibe of the council over the last few years. But I do think it's going to – some of the more aggressive, in-your-face – politics, you know, will get tamped down some. Look, there are still a very active, vocal movement left in the city, right? And on big issues, I'm sure they will still flood the council chambers and, you know, make their voices heard, right? I don't think that's going away. With Sawant, they had somebody who helped to sort of amplify and organize that kind of politics, right? Where from the dais, she would be denouncing her colleagues as sellouts and what, you know, with a huge boisterous crowd backing her up and also doing, I think some of that stuff is gonna, at least we'll see a little less of it. I also think going back to Erica's point about the fact that there are differences between these council members, that's true, but it really depends on the issue, right? Like, I think on public safety, I don't think there's a massive difference between Bob Kettle, say, and Joy Hollingsworth on some of the public safety questions. But I do think on things like taxation or other things, there may be a lot more division.
So I think, you know, saying that they agree on public safety is, that is, if you look at the campaign, I mean, you know, campaigns come down to a couple of slogans. People don't really articulate like what their plan is, right? And so it's easy to say that they totally agree on public safety. Okay, so what the council is actually going to have to be dealing with, though, are really complex issues like the Seattle Police Officers Guild contract, like the budget for public safety. And I mean, I would say, you know, Sandeep, to your point about all these toxic politics are going to go away now that Sawant is gone. Well, guess what? There's toxic politics on the right as well, not just on the left. And I think that, you know, again, remains to be seen how much all these folks totally are in lockstep with one another. You know, when it gets beyond the campaign slogan of "I want more cops," they're facing, you know, a $250 million deficit in the next couple years. And so it's not going to be a matter of just like saying "I love cops" or "I don't love cops." It's going to be a matter of, do we tax? Do we cut the budget? Do, you know, we rein in some of these demands from SPOG not to have any accountability? I do think that there's, just real quickly on public safety, I think there's a likelihood that they will get run over by SPOG because of their lack of experience. But I don't think that's because, you know, they're all in lockstep about giving the police everything and don't tax anything, because that's just not realistic in a situation where you have hundreds of millions of dollars of a budget gap that you got to close.
Well, the SPOG contract, right, is negotiated on the executive side, right? This is something that the mayor's office has to come up with a contract agreement that then gets presented to the council for approval. And so, you know, we'll see what that contract looks like.
Well,
I do think
they also have members on the Labor Relations Policy Committee. I just want to say
Strauss, right? Dan Strauss is on there?
Yeah.
I don't know who else.
I think there's really broad consensus in Seattle politics that cuts across the political divide, whether you're more moderate or more kind of left, around reform, right, of SPD. Where things fell off the cliff was when the conversation turned to things like cutting the number of cops. You know, the kind of abolition defund stuff is where things got super divisive. But around reform, I think there's pretty broad support, and I do think there's widespread feeling that SPOG is an impediment to that, right? And that we do need to stand up. We saw in the campaign 911 alternatives. Every single candidate talked about the need for a non-armed 911, you know, alternative response, right?
And I mean, so, every candidate talked about the need for the fifth alternative in the comprehensive plan. I don't know that means they have a detailed plan that they can articulate about what that means. So that's a box check.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody has a detailed plan on anything right now. So I agree with you on that point. I mean, I think there's, you know, if you think about public safety if we want to reduce public safety to the question of policing, I think there's some pretty significant consensus among most of these new council members, right? Now, when you said they're facing a big budget deficit and some of their kind of, you know, if you want to, for lack of a better term, sort of pro-policing, you know, campaign commitments are going to run up against the reality of lack of resources and what's going to happen there in terms of taxation. I think that is a real issue, and there's a real tension there, and we don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, Teresa Mosqueda and the council announced at the end of this budget process that they weren't going to move forward with, you know, a big new tax proposal like a muni cap gains tax this year, and so they're kind of kicking the can down the road to this new council, along with the you know quote unquote deficit that they're facing, which is contested exactly what the size and scope of that deficit is. But nonetheless, those are things that this new council's going to have to grapple with.
Well, the mayor's budget office and the city council's independent budget office agree. So I'm not sure who's contesting it.
Right. If you fund all the shiny new toys that the city council, many of which are fun toys, but or good toys.
I would love to know what you think is a toy in their budget, Sandeep.
I think some of the Green New Deal shit are toys. I think it's virtue signaling bullshit. Yeah.
I would love to hear you point to a program that you think is a
climate,
toy.
Climate denier Sandeep Kapoor.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you, instead of pointing to just a blanket general concept, what programs do you think are toys?
To get more serious about this, $200 million,
which is like...
To get more serious about this, the era of somebody at the council shouting, no austerity budgets, and there can never be anything cut
totally
again. I think
serious.
That era is over,
I'm being
right?
totally I think, serious. I really want to know how you think they're going to cut...
Do you not think that there's going to be some significant... sort of quote-unquote cuts to the budget?
Of course I do. But you're saying that there's just a ton of junky little toys that we can throw away, and I'm asking you to name one of them because you seem to think that it's possible. You seem to think that it's possible to cut $200 to $250 million from the budget.
I didn't say that. I did not say that.
Okay, so some significant portion of that. So let's say $50 million. Find me $50 million in cuts.
Yeah, there has been an enormous growth of city government over the last decade plus, right? Far faster than inflation and population growth, right? So absolutely, like, are there worthwhile things the city government's doing now that maybe they won't be doing a year from now? Maybe, you know, probably. But in the interest of sort of like, you know, a more balanced fiscal approach, is there likely to be some combination of cuts with probably some revenue increases, though I don't know for sure with this new council? I think like that's likely, right?
I just think it's funny that you're so fiscally prudent when it comes to unspecified programs, but when it comes to defund the police, i.e. let's cut some of these
orgasmic era of no austerity budget sort of holding sway is over, right? Probably. I mean, it doesn't seem like, you know, that sort of mantra or slogan is going to carry a lot of weight with these new council members, given, you know, the kind of commitments they made on the campaign trail. So, look, I think a muni cap gains tax is quite potentially in play. Like, even, you know, it was in this current budget session, it was Alex Peterson who was arguing for it, right? Though he wanted a revenue neutral proposal. That cut other taxes, but I think that's going to be on the table. Obviously, jump starts on the table. So there's revenue is going to be a real question in this next session, but so are cuts.
And I didn't hear any specific programs that you think are toys.
You know, the first thing I see shit like this all the time. Like when OLS is putting out OLS being the Office of Labor Standards, right? When OLS is putting out RFPs for things like art projects celebrating the, you know, gig worker legislation they paid and they want artists to submit there. That's when I think they have too much money for their own good.
I mean,
right?
OLS,
like, that is not
the Office of Labor Standards, which is the only office in the city that enforces labor standards for on companies. And we have, you know, quite a few labor
and
laws.
Let me finish.
So anyway, OLS, which is the only department that enforces labor standards in the city, has a budget of about $10 million. So again, I'm just wondering, I mean, you're probably talking about, I don't know which art project you're mad about specifically, but I'm going to guess that it's not a very big portion of that money. I mean, you kind of remind me of Republicans making fun of the NEA saying that art is, you know, a frivolous, is just frivolity, and if we cut it, we're going to fix the budget. Well, guess what? I mean, we don't spend that much money on art in the city of Seattle. And I notice, you know, you're not looking at, for example, the Office of Economic Development, which funds stuff like, murals promoting Major League Baseball in all the downtown windows that are now moldering there and look like shit. But, you know, that wasn't frivolous. That wasn't frivolous spending. That's good spending because it's business spending.
I suspect there will be cuts there, too.
But if it's for gig workers, then, you know, that's a waste of money.
Art about gig workers. Art about their law, right? Like, that's ridiculous. That was ridiculous. And it is indicative of the fact that, like, you want to talk about OLS and how they're empire building and how they've expanded over the last few years, right? I mean, anyway, we're getting
they
too
have,
far
like,
down
they
in the
have
weeds.
They have 20-something employees, just to be clear. Empire
yeah,
building.
Yeah, and they're adding them at a rapid rate, right? They just passed this 10-cent fee, and I worked on this, so I should say I'm not a neutral observer here on this, but you know, I have clients that opposed it, but they built in enormous number of, well, not enormous, but I think given the scale of OLS, a significant number of new FTEs just in this fee, along with like $750,000 a year and kind of walking around money, right, which is money that they're going to flow for quote unquote outreach to favored outside groups, like, and I think we all know the bulk of that money is going to go to Working Washington, right? I mean, this was the way kind of left progressive governance worked in Seattle for the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years, where it was sort of righteous to build into this stuff. Hey, let's build into this new law a bunch of money to flow to the, you know, the Teamsters because we love the Teamsters, or to Working Washington because we love to Working Washington, or, you know, and give them a piece of the pie. And I think some of that stuff is going to get a lot more scrutiny now. And should.
Sandeep, what you said was you could also see taxes on the table. If they totally. Do end up raising taxes, finding some programs that they want to reevaluate and actually raise taxes, I mean, those aren't really cuts at all. It's not anti-austerity budget. Are you implying there could be more spending? Or you're saying we're going to see $50,000 of cuts and no new revenue?
No, I'm saying it's probably, I'm guessing here that there's going to be some balance, right? I mean, I think Erica's right that scope, if they did it all with cuts, it's going to be pretty extensive, right? So I would think there's going to be a lot of pressure on some of the new council members that sort of ran on a kind of tax skepticism to, you know, once they start grappling with the actual, you know, numbers and realities of the budget, to start looking more at revenue. And that goes for the mayor as well. Yeah.
Erica, do you think it's unreasonable that they could find programs to sunset that they just, for whatever reason, whether it's ideological or they actually don't think those programs are working, to make cuts, to make $50,000 worth of cuts?
50,000? You mean 50 million?
I don't know. I mean, it's to me, these are, yeah, 50, sorry, Jesus, 50 million. Yeah, that just shows how abstract these numbers are to me and how well I understand the budget. But
yeah,
$50 million is definitely what I meant.
I don't think that, this is part of, I mean, my overall frustration with campaign rhetoric that is like has grown, you know, stronger over the years is that, yeah, I mean, what was Sandeep's term? Tax skepticism. Okay, like, yeah, it's real easy to stand there on a, you know, on a dais at a debate and say I'm against taxes and we have a spending problem. Like Sandeep, who could only identify an art exhibit at Seattle Center that might not have even been paid through OLS.
Paid through OLS.
Well, I saw the press release.
I'll send you the RFP.
Okay.
I'll send you the
RFP. Well, anyway.
It didn't go through new city council member Maritza Rivera's Seattle Office of Arts and Culture.
No. The RFP came out of OLS.
Okay. So, yeah. So my frustration with this rhetoric is that they haven't looked at these budgets. I mean, there's this idea that, like, and this is not just this crop of newcomers. They all say this, you know, I'm going to audit the budget and I'm going to really take a fine tooth comb to this budget, which is impossible for one person to do or one council office. And I think that, you know, inevitably, every single council member who comes in realizes the budget is really complex. Every dollar has a constituency. And no, I don't think it's going to be possible to just come in and say, you know, here's $50 million that we can cut out, you know, no problem. And it's not 50 million. It's, you know, I mean, even if they had passed the capital gains tax to offset the water tax, I mean, we're talking like a couple tens of millions of dollars in new revenue. So it's going to be a lot more than 50 million that they need to cut if they're going to be, you know, tax skeptical, as Sandeep puts it. So I don't think that it's going to be easy or possible for them to just come in and find, you know, millions and tens of millions of dollars to in waste to cut.
Well, not necessarily waste, but what about, as I said, my question was programs that they either don't like for ideological reasons or they don't think are working.
Right. An example we brought up in the past, right, is participatory budgeting, right, which finally came to, you know, what looks to be, thank fucking God, like a final conclusion, right? And I will give them credit, like what started as a straight up massive ethics violation has turned into something where they did this participatory budget process. It took them years to do it, and they've come up with a vague spending plan on some areas that they're going to spend money that they don't really have any details of how that money is actually going to get deployed. But maybe, you know, some good will come of that money, but they've also abandoned it. It's pretty clear there's no appetite.
What's your point, Sandeep?
My point is that this was the kind of, you know, big, you know, spend till the cows come home kind of thinking that animated the council a few years ago that is now different. The vibe is different on that, right? And I think there is going to be more skepticism about some of this stuff. And I do think they're going to go through some of these budgets with more of a fine-tooth comb. I think some stuff's going to get cut. I don't think they're going to do $200 million of revenue next year.
So $27 million is what you're talking about as spend till the cows come home. So this began in 2020. So the money has been available. And I mean, these projects, you know, you may think they're just crap, but, 24/7 public restrooms is something that I started writing about back in 2020 when it became quite obvious that, you know, homeless people had no access to restrooms. That's still a problem. It's one of the things that, you know, your crowd, Sandeep, complains about the most. Oh my God, I have to walk over the needles and feces in the street. Public restrooms actually address that problem. So I don't agree that this is just, you know, a slush fund of stuff that they could have just not spent and could have cut. It's pretty important, vital stuff that Jenny Durkin failed to do anything about, you know, for years, even though people were saying this is a vital need. And that's just one of the things they're spending money on.
Didn't the money come from Jenny Durkin's some sort of Jenny Durkin fund initially anyway? Was it actually
it did.
The council reallocating?
Originally,
some kind
back
of...
in 2020, Jenny, when she was mayor, at the height of the whole sort of George Floyd, you know, protest stuff, announced that she wanted to do a kind of $100 million commitment of spending on BIPOC-related issues, right? And there was a big battle with the council over that and who was going to determine where that money went. And I think they carved out... So the left of the council carved out a chunk of that money for stuff like participatory budgeting, right? Which in its first initial formulation, I think, Erica, you would admit, was pretty freaking outrageous.
Well,
right?
I think that the process wasted a ton of money. I absolutely agree with you on that. I mean, but again, we're not in 2020, Sandeep. We're now in 2023.
I know.
So let's drag you into the present.
New world order, Erica. I don't think you're grasping.
Oh my
the new
God.
World order.
I just
the second floor.
I don't know when you're gonna leave 2020 or how we're gonna get you into the present, Sandeep. But
I'm channeling George H.W. Bush, I think, though.
Lord. Yeah, I think Jello Biafra had like a whole bit about that on one of his albums.
I prefer the Jerry Brown version, right? California Uber Hollis, right?
I thought it was the New World the Order before
version.
That you didn't like, Sandeep. Anyway.
We've got even bigger problems now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we've talked about public safety. We've talked about taxes. And, you know, this...
Yeah. DK we talked about public... DK is a place. The DK is a place where we can agree.
Yeah. We intersect. Okay, sorry, David.
You mean about which is the best song? Because it's obviously Holiday in Cambodia, not California Uber Alice. But whatever. So the question. No, the question is.
Lynch the Landlord.
I would argue for Too Drunk
Lynch
to
the Landlord.
Fuck.
Really?
Too Drunk to Fuck is the best Dead Kennedys.
I think you're not taking it in the ironic spirit in which it was meant.
Oh, ow. All right. Well, I just want to say we've been keep all that. We've kind of been talking about this for a while, that this new council faces this conundrum of whether or not it can actually follow through on a lot of the progressive promises that it seems to have made and at the same time make budget cuts and whether or not. You know, I think it seems like a real open question. And you hinted at it in your first answer. Where are the cracks on this new city council, Erica or Sandeep? But let's go with Erica since Sandeep has had a little bit more time today so far, I think. I've been keeping close.
Keeping score.
Close clock, like usual. Yeah, I think it's, let's see, 20, no. Anyway, Erica, where do you see the cracks on this new council, if there are any? Obviously, on the left, we have Tammy Morales, perhaps somewhat lonely over there.
Very lonely,
and
yeah.
I don't know, who is to the immediate right of Tammy Morales? I guess that would still be Dan Strauss, even though he was endorsed by Bruce Harrell. But beyond that, where are the cracks among these new council members? I will note that on Friday, there was a cocktail party celebrating the elections of Hollingsworth, Rivera, Kettle, and Moore. Sokka wasn't, I don't know if he was invited. I don't think he was involved in that. But
that's
anyway,
really interesting.
Where do you see the cracks,
well,
Erica?
I mean, Sokka was also, I mean, you know, every single one of Rob Sokka's opponents endorsed Maren Costa, the woman running against him. So, I mean, his relationship with his colleagues will be interesting to watch how that evolves. I mean, I think the main cracks, you know, are not clear yet in terms of how these folks are going to work together. But I think bigger picture and pulling out to all of City Hall, you know, I think that Mayor Bruce Harrell, and I think I might have said this on the podcast before, but, you know, now kind of has a mandate for his agenda. All of his people won for the most part. And, you know, he's got a 6-member council supermajority, often with Dan Strauss voting along with that supermajority. So what's he going to do? You know, he's been held back by this, you know, what Sandeep calls, you know, this uber liberal council for his first 2 years. So now he has
the old new world order.
Yeah. So now he has a couple of years to perform before, you know, his next election and get everything done that he wanted to get done. And so we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, on the council, Harrell was not a particularly super active member. As mayor, he's been, you know, much more energetic and vocal, and he's obviously very popular. But that can go away if you have a mandate for your agenda and you don't get anything done. And so I think a lot of pressure is on the mayor now to do some of the stuff that, you know, he said he's going to do, the economic revitalization, the downtown plan, you know, policing, hiring police. They're unleashed now, Sandeep. They don't have Sawant preventing them from hiring cops. So, so are we going to get those 1,400 cops that all these new council members said they were going to hire? I think, I'm being a bit sarcastic because I think that is impossible. But, you know, what does the mayor do now? That's where I see the cracks coming in.
I think it's a fair question to ask. 1,400 cops is not going to happen overnight, obviously, but it's a fair question to ask about whether they're going to do better on police recruiting now, right? I mean, I think that is something that a bunch of these candidates ran and won on, and the mayor has advocated. And I do think, particularly again, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but in past sessions right after the election, but this was an election fundamentally at the end. I think the pivot in this election was about public safety. And so I do think the ball is in the mayor and the new council's court, and there's some public expectation from their supporters that things are going to get better on some of those fronts. Better, quote unquote, better, right? And it may, maybe not your definition of better, Erica, but their definition of better. You seem to be pro, you know, encampments everywhere and public use and whatever, right?
I mean, that's, of course, an insane thing to say. I'm pro actually addressing
those
problems.
I'm goading you a little bit on that. I'm being facetious about it. But, you know, so yeah, I do think the ball is in their court on some of this stuff. I do think there's some public expectations that they would be well advised to try to meet. It's interesting. I was at that party, by the way, on Friday. It was a packed room in Belltown, and I think there was a lot of celebration in that room.
Sonny, if you didn't invite me as your date, I'm so hurt.
Yeah, I know. I should have sent you the invite. A lot of excitement about new beginnings and all of that kind of stuff. A lot of cheering. I mean, it was sort of Sarah Nelson's holiday party, and I think, I mean, this raises, I think, some interesting questions about what we're going to see in the immediate future, right? The first things that are going to happen is, we talked about the appointment a little bit. I think right now, that appointment to Teresa Mosqueda's seat it's an open question who's going to get it. I'm hearing a lot of different names floating around. I don't think anybody knows who's really got the inside track on that, whether it's Tanya Wu, who lost to Tammy Morales, or I've heard, you know, Vivian Tsong Maritz, potentially. I met recently with Angela Poe Russell, a former King person who seems interested and is, you know, somebody that Sarah Nelson has mentioned as would be a good candidate. So there's any number of names out there. So that's going to be one thing that we're going to see play out, is that appointment. The other thing is the reorg, right? I mean, I'm assuming that Sarah Nelson is going to be the council prez. The tentative word I'm hearing is likely that Dan Strauss will get budget. I've heard that four of the five newbies all wanted public safety.
Of course they did. Because which
I actually think, I'll shut up in a second here, which I actually think probably, given what we were just talking about the challenges around some of these issues, might be an indication that they are a little bit green and a little wide-eyed about sort of running into something that's going to be pretty challenging, right, to deal with and complicated. And so, but a bunch of them wanted it. And so we'll see how that all plays out and who gets what committees. But yeah, those are kind of going to be very interesting to watch how all of those dynamics play out over the next month.
Yeah, nobody ever wants, land use or transportation or utilities. I don't really have a lot to add, except that I do think it is what I was going to jump in and say, and then Sandeep said it very well, is, you know, I think it is quite naive to think that, you know, you can just jump in on public safety and start hiring cops. So if anybody is suggesting that, I think that they will find that it is quite more difficult than that. I know I'm coming off a little bit condescending, and I do want to walk that back a little bit. I mean, you know, city council, it's a job that you can learn on the job. There's been a lot of people over the years with no experience. I think what's different now is how many people are coming on with no experience or very little. And the fact that, you know, there's not like Elisa Herbold, who was, you know, on and around the council for decades to sort of show them the ropes of like just super basic stuff, like how to write legislation, you know, how to run a meeting of the city council so that the laws, you know, actually pass and hold up, you know, et cetera. So, but I do think it is, of course, possible to learn on the job. But I don't think five people galloping to run public safety necessarily gives me a lot of excitement for some of those other committees that are also really important, like land use.
You know, Erica, they could appoint an experienced council member to replace Teresa Mosqueda if they wanted to. I guess you didn't have any ideas about who, but before Sandeep tells us who it's going to be, because he obviously is chomping at the bit, what do you think they ought to be looking for? You've been covering council for a really long time, and experience, obviously, but what else?
Experience is obviously, as you said, I mean, that is kind of the most important thing. I mean, if this is a placeholder council member, I think it'd be great to bring back somebody who has actually been on the council. I don't know who that would be.
Gene Godden.
Oh,
Gene
Lord. Godden. You know, so there's that. I mean, a lot of the people that, you know, whose names are floating out there are folks who either are ambitious to be on the council themselves, but have not been, like Brianna Thomas. I would say she would be a good appointment in some ways because she, you know, has worked on legislation. She was an aide to Lorena Gonzalez, who was on the council. So somebody who knows a little bit about the council's inner workings, I mean, that would just be ideal. I mean, some of these folks that are being floated, like, you know, like Tanya, like Angela, you know, just, I mean, again, you're just reintroducing and sort of you're expanding the problem of people with no experience to seven council members from six. And so, I mean, I would love to see somebody who actually like would be a placeholder, you know, or be a placeholder and run again. I mean, you know, somebody like Brianna, but I don't know, Sally Clark. Like, you know, I'm just throwing names out there, but my God, I mean, they do need some institutional knowledge. Like, you can't just devalue that completely.
Right. Well, it's true that Dan and Tammy, who got elected in 2019, are the longest serving. I mean, they're one-term council members. They're the longest serving council members. And Sarah got elected in 2021, and they're the holdovers. I have no idea who's going to get the appointment. I don't think anybody knows right now. I think there are a lot of names out there, and it's still very early and very fluid. I am hearing, and again, all of this is subject to change, but I am hearing there's a lot of thinking that maybe they don't want a kind of caretaker, someone who commits not to run, because there's going to be an election, right, for whoever it is, or there's going to be an election for this seat next year, right? So whoever's appointed, if they're not a caretaker, they're going to have to run for it next year and then run for it the year after, right, for the full term. And so the word on the street seems to be that there's more interest in getting somebody who wants to continue in the position than appointing someone as a temporary one-year person who commits not to run in the next cycle. So, but we'll see how that plays out. I don't know.
We're going to leave it there. Unfortunately, Sandeep gets the last word. Thanks so much to Erica, Sandeep, and to all of you for listening, and to our amazing editor, Quinn Waller. Please support the show. Help us pay for Quinn and our other expenses by going to patreon.com/SeattleNice. And thanks, everybody, so much for listening.